Psalm 53 is almost an identical repetition of Psalm 14, but there's some differences. In Psalm 14, the names of God, Elohim, show up 3 times, and the name Lord, Jehovah, shows up 4 times. There are a total of 7 times that the names for God used in this psalm, and both names would indicate that Gentile and Jewish atheism is the subject. In Psalm 53, the name God, Elohim, shows up 7 times, seemingly suggesting that Gentile atheism rather than Jewish atheism is the subject of Psalm 53. In Psalm 14, the superscription is for the choir director, a psalm of David. In Psalm 53, the superscription is for the choir director, according to Mahalath, a maskil of David. The Hebrew word Mahalath is related to one that refers to a soothing sound as a harp. This word is specifically used to soothe one who is hurting or sick. And the maskil means this is to be carefully studied because instruction in this psalm can bring one to great happiness and blessing. In Psalm 14, 5, and 6, the emphasis is on God protecting the righteous who are attacked by the wicked. In Psalm 53, verse 5, the emphasis is on God destroying the wicked that are attacking the righteous. So the point of this psalm is this: God's people can find great comforting joy when they're hurting because of attacks of godless atheists, knowing that God will punish the godless and deliver the righteous. It's a psalm of wonderful hope in the midst of God rejecting, God mocking world. Israel lived and still does live in a world in which she is dominated by foreign godless nations. In fact, this psalm will become very applicable later in future day. The ultimate atheist is ruling the world and trying to destroy Israel. And there's 3 parts to this psalm. There's the description of the fool. And let's remind ourselves again that the noun fool does not refer to one who is incapable of learning. The word refers to one who has lost a strong coloring, who is withered and faded. The fool is a person who has heard truth but does not have a color when it comes to living truth. He may be very religious, but he is also very foolish. So look at this description of a fool. Verse 1, the fool says in his heart, there is no God. They're corrupt, doing abominable iniquity. There is none who does good. So he says in his heart, there is no God, this fool. Now, do not overlook the fact that the fool does not necessarily say there is no God by his mouth. He says it in his heart. And by using the noun for God, Elohim, the text suggests that a fool denies the existence of the sovereign, majestic God who is creator. The fool becomes his own God and elevates himself to being God. Some man whom would look at this, he'd say our ultimate destiny is to be gods. It's another form of foolishness. The person does not deny the existence of God, but he elevates sinful man to the same level as God. He is a fool. And the fool is corrupt. The word corrupt means that behind the scenes, fools are sunk down into what is sinful and evil. And a fool does not submit itself to righteousness, but that which is corrupt. And he's committed abominable injustice. The fool has done things and said things that are unjust abominations in the sight of God. And we see that many times as we watch our culture, even the people that they elevate in our culture. The fool does not do good. What this means is nothing a fool does is viewed by God as good, even if a fool does what society says is good. And then we move beyond that and we see other things concerning this fool. Verse 2, God looks down from heaven on the children of man to see if there are any who understand, who seek after God. They have all fallen away. Together they have become corrupt. There is none who does good, not even one. So the fool turns aside from any path of wisdom or righteousness. The fool joins with others who are collectively corrupt. It's totally amazing that these Bible classifies fools. They form this collective bond. They're cultish when they get together. They believe that they are above the God of the Bible. And the fool attacks faithful people of God. In verse 4, have those who work evil no knowledge, who eat up my people as they eat bread and do not call upon God? Look at the target of the fool. It's faithful people of God. Fools attack, destroy, and eat up God's people who love him and love his word. And the perception of God just is messed up. We look back on verse 2 and God looks down from on high at these puny, sinful men who think they're so important. And the term sons of men refers to those who are unsaved. The term specifically describes people who will be in the tribulation. However, it also describes us prior to God saving us. No unsaved person understands the ways of God. The idea here is that God looks down from heaven to see if any man understands. And no one does. The word understand is one that means to look at something, to understand it, and to turn one's mind towards something. In this case, the idea would be that God looks to see if any man naturally turned his mind toward God. God described what he saw in Genesis 6:5 when he said, the Lord saw the wickedness of man was great on the earth, and that every intent and thought of his heart was evil continually. So no unsaved person seeks after God. The truth is, humans, by their own nature, will seek anything but God. The truth is, at times, so do we. F.B. Meyer said that many people will look at a nation like Russia and say how sad that this nation is filled with poor atheists, but what they don't realize is that many people in our own country are practical atheists, living as if there is no God. They don't care about God, his word, or his work. The word seek means to seek something aggressively. In fact, it presents the idea of doing such an intense search for something that a path is trampled down. The point is, no unsaved person on his own will ever trample down a path seeking after God. Every unsaved person is turned aside to his own way. Godless people are not interested in God's way. They're interested in their own way. Godless people don't care about God's way. No unsaved person does good in God's sight. An act, even what society would deem as a righteous act, is nothing but filthy rags in the sight of God. From God's perspective, no unsaved person does anything that is good from God's moral, spiritual, and ethical analysis. No unsaved person realizes he's attacking God's people and heading to judgment. God's people think nothing of attacking godly, faithful people. You see that again as I repeat this verse. Have those who work evil no knowledge, and who eat up my people as they eat bread and do not call upon God. But then we've worked to verse 5. There they are in great terror, where then there is no terror. For God scatters the bones of him who encamps against you and puts them to shame, for God has rejected them. And every unsaved person will be brought to the place of great fear when he faces the God who will reject him. Deep in the minds and hearts of those who are lost is the awareness that the clock is ticking, and I'm going to face God. And it's ironic, but there will come a day when they will fear the God they denounced. Herbert Lockyer researched many of the final words that were said by those who had lived their lives as atheist or agnostic. He wrote this, "Infidels and agnostics are usually cowards when the death dew lies cold in their brow. Unprepared to enter eternity, they lose their braggadocio as it gates open to receive them. What fear grips their hearts, and how pathetic and hopeless their last words are. The only light that could have shone through the gloom of death and pointed them to the skies was rejected, and they die, even as they lived without God, and therefore without hope." Example, one of the most celebrated authors was Edward Gibbon, who wrote The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire. It's one of the great historical works ever written, but Gibbon was a God mocker, and his final words were these, "This day may be my last. I will agree that the immortality of the soul is at times a very comfortable doctrine. All this is now lost, finally, irrevocably lost. All is dark and doubtful." And then the anticipation in the end here in verse 6 says this: that salvation for Israel would come out of Zion when God restores the fortunes of his people. Let Jacob rejoice, let Israel be glad. And Israel needs to realize deliverance will eventually come to a world of Israel haters and God mockers. God will one day reverse everything and Israel will be saved. Jacob, who is Israel, can be glad and rejoice, for the future is bright. This is one of the greatest defenses against atheism. Explain Israel. Explain Israel's existence.